Phrase wash bag.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Wash Bag podcast. I'm Ron Smith. So it's a new season with new hopes, new players and new media strategy, not ban. To help me preview the season, I'm joined by Andrew Steele Davis of Flit Wiltshire.
Hello.
Hello. Sam Orsted, Total Sport.
Good evening, Ron.
Is it Total Swindon Sport or Total Sport?
Just call
Swindon?
Us Total Sport.
Just Total. And also former BBC Wiltshire match commentator, Vic Morgan.
And Total Sport columnist, don't forget.
And Washbag. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Washbag.
Yeah. But not Flit Wiltshire.
No, so, I haven't been asked yet.
The problem is, though, is because Sam and Andrew are both bands, I don't know why you turned up, so... it's just me.
They're not banned from the podcast, I suppose.
No, not anymore. It's been sorted out, yeah. Yeah, we've got plenty of sort of questions from Matt 42 from Stratton St Margaret's, and lots to discuss regarding Fanside. But let's start off with today's game, which I didn't attend, against Liverpool, and the pre-season results so far. Vic, you're at the game.
Yeah.
How did this performance compare against the other ones in pre-season?
Well, I've seen Everton and Liverpool, and we could have scored in the first 30 seconds against Everton, and played very well against Liverpool. I thought we did all right. I mean, obviously, Benteke drew a huge amount of attention, a fantastic goal from him. I mean, gosh, that's why he pays 39 million quid. And of course, he loves playing and scoring at the County Ground, doesn't he? Because he got two for Villa here. Terrific. I thought they really looked rather good, and they matched Liverpool for the great majority of the game. I thought it was a pretty good performance.
I mean, that's still six defeats in seven pre-season games. It's sort of like a pre-season, not like what we've had in recent years, where we mostly play non-league teams.
Yeah.
Albeit we have had defeats against two of them this year. I mean, Sam, is it sort of what's the reason for the high-profile friendlies? Is it purely just kind of getting money in at a time of year we don't actually have much in way of income streams?
Yeah, or? I think that'd be pretty high up the agenda. I mean, they filled the County Ground today, and they've got 5,000 plus for the other three. You don't usually get that in pre-season, so he ought to have created quite a lot of extra cash for the club to fill any overheads that they might not have been able to fulfil with revenue streams during the summer. In theory, I don't know. I don't know where it goes, and it's hard to ever know without any full set of accounts, which they're not obliged to provide. So, in terms of getting a team prepared for it, well, I don't know whether you can know a lot. Is it about confidence? Because then you play non-league teams and win. I don't know. I think that it must be driven predominantly by getting a bit of extra cash in, which is not a bad thing. Whether or not it will benefit the team going into the start of the season, we'll find out on Saturday when Bradford come along. But we look at the team that they've played, and have they had just a James Hansen, and the way that they pump the ball in, and are they prepared in that sense for that style of play, and the way that they'll probably get against Exeter as well? Although I know Paul Tisdale likes to play the ball a little bit.
Excellent place and lovely football, yeah.
But I don't know, it's a funny pre-season in that respect, but I think it's hard to ever judge any of it until you see the competitive stuff and when that gets going.
You agree, Andrew, about the sort of... I mean, I've only been to the two games, which were the Supermarine game, which was the first match, first time we've been beaten by Supermarine since about 97, I think that was, and that was a bit of a surprise. I mean, don't read into it too much, and the Everton one, but is it what you expected Town to see pre-season?
I think has already been alluded to. I think it's been a bit of a strange run purely because of the sort of teams that they've faced. Normally you would have a bunch of non-league teams and then the odd sort of big team, if you like. I've covered every pre-season game this summer, and funny enough, they've looked out of sorts on their travels. You know, Supermarine, Petersfield, Solihull, there were the odd flashes of quality, but in terms of the Premier League teams they faced, they've really impressed in patches. I thought today was the pick of the bunch. I think in flashes they looked really, really good. I think, you know, last year we spent so much time talking about the strength of the midfield. It looks like they've gone some way to strengthening that. Of course, you're not going to sort of replace the likes of Louis Thompson's like for like, but in terms of Drissa Traore, he looks a very good addition. Let's hope his injury isn't that bad.
It looked like hamstring. Was it hamstring?
It looked that way, the way he sort of hobbled off.
I mean, Cooper said it was a hamstring, but it was precautionary taking him off. But he did not move well when he was coming off. So looking at that, you'd be thinking, well, I'll be surprised if he plays next Saturday.
Yeah.
But you know, Paul Godfrey is a miracle worker, so never know.
Vic, Has there been a standout player so far pre-season for you?
Well, as I said, I've only seen the two games. One player I'm delighted to see is Jordan Turnbull, because for me, you know, that's arguably right now the best signing you've had all season. You know, that, you know, I thought he was tremendous last year. Jack Stevens got a lot of publicity, but for me, Turnbull was the much better defender and player. And I think it's terrific that he's back, apart from one run in the second half when he got himself marooned up the far end of the pitch, didn't quite know what to do. But I think he's quality, and I'm delighted he's back.
I mean, I'm a bit surprised that he is back. I'm not sure why, because Stevens did one season, part of a season, then came back, didn't he? And obviously they're doing the same thing with Turnbull. Is it the reason why they don't feel he's ready to go along to a championship club like Middlesbrough with Stevens for...
I don't
experience
think so,
now, or?
Because I mean, so I spoke to Les Reed down at Southampton at the end of last season, and he said that the natural progression would be for both of them to go into the Championship this year. All I can think of, the Championship clubs that have been suggested, that have been interested, haven't been able to say he's going to be playing regularly, because that's what they want to do at Southampton. They want to get their kids playing regularly in the Football League.
52 games last season.
Yeah. I mean, that's regular, isn't it? And if there is Championship interest, or has been in him, but they don't feel as though he's going to get the game time there, then they would probably revert to League One. And if they're reverting to League One, there's only one club that they're going to send him to in League One, and that's Swindon. So it must be that Southampton have assessed the possibilities for the Championship moves, and they don't think that he's going to benefit as much as playing regularly.
Because I guess Swindon's football is akin to Southampton's, isn't it? So that would be a big plus.
Les Reed definitely does like the way that the club's managed down here, for sure.
Good. And Andrew, with John Obika scored today.
Yeah,
is he sort of town's main goal threat this season?
I think he's looked really, really hungry throughout pre-season. He may have not gone and grabbed sort of 6, 7, 10 goals, but I think the most important thing is that he's looked hungry, he's looked sharp, he's, you know, chomping at the bit. And I think as things stand, obviously we know the club are in the market for another striker, but as things stand, especially with that front three, which I think works really well with Hilton and Byrne, I think Obika will be the guy to lead the line. I mean, Michael Smith, for me, I think it's been reported that he may be potentially homesick and maybe...
We look really outsourced, I'm sorry, cutting there, but on the Everton game, I mean, I haven't seen much about him,
but
he was just really... just didn't look interested.
He's struggled, hasn't he? You know, he's missed certain games due to blisters, which is what the excuse the club have used. But I mean, every game I've seen him play this summer, he's not looked his normal self. I mean, for me, he's a player that for some reason attracts a barrage of criticism, some which I've not always agreed with, and sort of I've been the one to sort of stick up for him on social media. But this summer he has looked out of sorts, and you would imagine that if the club get a bid that suit their valuation, and it is from a club up north, they'll let him go and then try and bring someone else in. But going back to your original question, I think for me, you know, John Obika looked really, really good, and you know, hopefully if he can sort of stay fit in terms of that shoulder injury disrupted in last year, he should be getting 15-20 goals, you would hope.
Cool. Okay, moving on to sort of the players, and the key one is for me is sort of with a sizeable transfer fee received for Luongo Gladman, how much of it was really Luongo Gladman, we don't know, plus significant wage savings for Fodringham and Williams. Where's the money gone? And is it, I mean, Matt suggests, you know, are we skint? Is there much in terms of finances? Why haven't we gone out there and bought a player for X hundred thousand so far? Perhaps we tried to with a lad from Shrewsbury. But Sam, what's...
I look at you sceptically there, because clubs are well known to put in derisory bids just to say that they've made a bid for a player. I'm not saying that's what they have done in this situation.
Bournemouth with Will Randall?
It's potentially PR.
Yeah.
Potentially, and the drip feed of information at the time that might suit the club will always benefit them in that sense. The public relations guys, that might be entirely wrong. I'm speculating, but I'm not speculating without a foundation of knowledge of how the industry works. So take those reports with a pinch of salt. It probably happened, but did it happen at the time that it was reported? And did it happen with as much intent as might have been suggested with the report? That's something to figure out for yourself.
But where's the money gone, though?
Where's the money? Well, first of all, you have to break down a transfer in modern football. and say you receive £2 million for a player, you don't get £2 million in a nice check all up front. If it's over a 3 or 4 year contract for that player, you're going to be getting it in 3, 4, maybe 8 instalments over the course of the time of that contract. So if you break down what Swindon got for those players and when it comes through, there's a cash flow issue. Obviously debts have to be paid off, and debts that have interest on them as well that's been put in to keep the club going, you have to pay off the interest as well as the debt. I don't know how much debt has been accrued, and when I say debt, it's a word that has very many different meanings. But those loans have been paid back according to the hierarchy, so maybe part of this money was used to pay back and service those loans. Maybe it's sitting there and waiting to be spent on the right player. If it is there, how come there hasn't been a second bid for, say, Goldson at Shrewsbury? Because you don't put in one and not go back. Alternatively, he needs the money to be able to continue the ongoing financing of the football club, which is fine. That's another way to do it. If supporters are going to buy into the way in which the club will proceed going forward, they're going to have to acknowledge that they're not going to get big money signings all the time. And even when you get a big money signing in headlines, the figure that is presented to by the buying club is nowhere near the amount that they've initially paid, and they may never even get anywhere close to paying that figure, or it might be done in picking up a contract from someone else that is worth the equivalent amount of that fee that is stated in reports. So I don't know where the money has gone, mainly because we're not told and they don't speak to us, and we obviously don't have we don't have a set of accounts, which again is their prerogative. They can choose to or not. What has been suggested to me is that the budget will be significantly lower again this year in terms of annual wage than it was last year. So if it was low at 1.6, and this is pushing towards the low seven figures, potentially below that, then that's the kind of future looking at. If they do well on that money, then fair play, why not? What I would say is, we were told we're going to be building for the future. Why are we offering 1 year deals here, there, everywhere? Now is the time to be offering 2, 3, especially for a player like Fabien Robert, who is obviously going to have some interest in him. And if he gets through to the winter and the winter window, clubs can start talking to him for a move in the summer.
When can they? They always sign the players with like an option of an additional year.
And that's what Drissa Traore has in his, but there was no publication of that same thing for Robert. So again, without being able to ask the questions, I am assuming, because they've said in one that he does have an option, that Robert doesn't, because they didn't publicise it. But if that's the case, why do that? Why aren't you going to give him 2, 3 years and then have the opportunity to sell?
Well, he might fail. I mean, when you kind of look at like sort of a Thomas DeSavi, you know, in terms of pre-season trialist, scored the brace against Nottingham Forest. I haven't seen the. No, I think I saw him against Everton. I mean, Andrew, you've seen him for all the games. You know, how good is he? You know, does he deserve a 2-3 year contract?
I think he certainly showcased his abilities at home. I mean, I remember away at Solihull, he got his goal, but he was pretty, in my opinion, he was pretty much sort of didn't really do a lot. I mean, the whole team that night sort of underperformed. Petersfield, again, he looked okay in flashes. But I mean, at home, obviously, he's been the main, up until Jordan Turnbull today, he's sort of been the main talking point amongst fans. You know, he's really excited people before they announced his signing. Obviously, you know, we were getting lots of questions. Is he going to sign? Is he going to sign? So I think, you know, Sam was saying, I think it would have been sensible to put him, you know, straight on a 2 year deal, because if it gets to January and he's done really, really well, clubs then can start talking to him, and it could be he'll get offered more money and then go in the summer, and Swindon will have to look to rebuild again. I mean, going back to your earlier question, I mean, I mean, you can't judge a player too much in pre-season, as you mentioned, Thomas DeSavi there. I mean, that's a lesson to us all to get too carried away, but we can only go on what we've seen so far, and what we've seen so far as a player who can certainly offer the team a lot in that number 10 role, especially that they've lost Luongo and Gladwin. So yeah, I think a 2 year deal, 3 year deal should be offered.
All I bring it back to is the fact that the chairman came out and openly stated at the end of last season that he was now building a team for the future, which is fine, but to me the current recruitment strategy for this summer does not seem long term. Doesn't even seem medium term to me. It seems short term. No one can question him about it because they're not able to. Well, one outlet can, so hopefully they will. And I think there's a phone in Monday, I believe, with him on the BBC. So hopefully some of the questions that we've raised here will be picked up by fans and asked to him, because they're legitimate questions. You said it's going to be a long term team. You've got a lot of season long loans. We know that's the model. That's fine, but they should be complemented by long term contracts, or at least medium term contracts. And at the moment, we don't have that here.
Because in every summer, it seems to me, you're going to go through this rebuilding process. I have no problem with a club being run on a sound financial footing. You don't spend a lot of money just because the trouble is with fans, and I'm one of them. You see, say, 4 million quid for Massimo Luongo and Gladwin, and you think, right, let's go and spend 4 million quid. Well, the reality of that is, don't go and spend 4 million quid, because you know that's going to be needed for other things. We know that there were 13,000 there against Liverpool, fantastic. There won't be 13,000 there against Bradford City. That's a dead set. So to me, to run it on a sound financial footing is the first and foremost thing. Make it a sound club. You've got a club which goes forward. The strategy seems to be season-long loans and the odd younger player bringing them through. If that works every season, it was a great season last year, that's fine. If it doesn't work, that's where the problems start.
Also, though, if you are going to do that every year, don't promise to the fans that you're going to have more long-term strategy.
No.
Say this is what's going to happen on an annual basis, and we will continue, the pledge is to continue to produce the football. If they continue to produce the football and say openly that's going to happen, no one can have any issues.
Nobody will complain.
But don't say that it's going to be something that it's not.
Because the thing is, I've long since come to the conclusion it is what it is. You watch today when the Liverpool fans turn up in great droves. That's not going to happen with Swindon. You know, you're not going to get people coming from the Far East to watch Swindon. That's not going to happen. We accept that. So it is what it is. And if you get to the Championship at some point, that's fantastic. But it is what it is, and that's the way it is. I'm sure.
It goes back to that 4 million, doesn't it? And obviously, it's Sam Touch there communicating. I mean, a lot of fans will, as we know, will see something, they'll jump on it. We, especially with social media thing as well, things
Where's
spread
and money being spent.
Exactly, and I think maybe I'm not asking for the club to come out and publish all their accounts. Just some, it's been pretty silent from the club this summer, and sometimes it's been really, really noticeable how silent it's gone. Just a statement or something to come out and say, look, this is where it's gone, or in my eyes, that would go a long way to helping things, because I've seen a lot of comments on social media from fans, whether it's heat at the moment or not, but some have said, should we really be parting with our hard-earned money to go and watch our team when we're not being told anything? And I do think the club, I know we're going to come onto it shortly, but I do think the club have let themselves down.
But that remains everybody's choice. I mean, the point is, I come from Devon to watch them every year, that's my choice. Nobody makes me do it. So you have that choice. If you're a fan and you don't like the club policy, then that's entirely up to you. You have that ultimate decision to make.
And again, to be fair to the chairman in this particular instance, though it said the square root of nothing, he did release a statement. I don't know when it was. Was it mid-July?
Yeah, 13th.
Roughly around the time of the Supermarine game. To have some form of communication. Yeah. That, as far as I'm aware, that's the only thing that's been, with the exception of the statement on the current media policy, that's the only from-the-top communication that we've had. Though, again, it said very little. It was clever PR, but it couldn't be questioned because we're not allowed to ask questions.
No. The surprise meeting, to go back in terms of sort of players and signings and strategy, as you were saying, Sam, the key one for me is the fact that we're going to get a good goalkeeper. It would seem in on loan, but the goalkeeper, the bedrock position, is one that I want to actually have that permanent signing, a player of sufficient quality come in who's going to be here for a good few years.
Well, we've been a bit spoiled, haven't we,
in
recent seasons?
But that's the beauty, because we've rarely had a goalkeeper we can trust and want to keep for a long time. But what Fodringham has kind of proved to us so much is that the importance of having that person in.
Yeah, I mean, I
instead of relying
he's
on
in the
on
top
a
five
keeper.
Keepers I've ever seen at Swindon. Which position he's in, it's up to you to decide, but he's just been amazingly good, and I wish him all the very best at Rangers, and you know, you might say it's an odd move, but he's playing in front of 40,000 people every week, so it's fantastic.
Possibility to be playing Europa League football next year, Champions League football in 2 years.
So, you know, he, as we know, he's an exceptional keeper, and we might have to just bear that in mind, whatever happens in the goalkeeping's position in the next few weeks. The Liverpool keeper, to me today, looked rather good. I mean, I made one diving save, which I thought was a header as well in the first half, which was fantastic. Saved a certain goal. He looked pretty good.
And when I saw him against West Brom for the first time, what really jumped out at you, the fact that he is so quick of his line, and he showed that time and time and time again today. And I mean, obviously that's an important attribute to have as a keeper. Obviously, again, it would be nice to have a keeper who's tied down. I do think the club have got a good keeper who's tied down in Tyrell Balfour. I've been very vocal in my support of him this summer, probably so much so that some fans may think I'm his brother or something, but I mean, he is, for me...
No, you're Fabian Roberts' brother, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we're not quite sure who he's related to anymore, but I mean, yeah, with Ty, he hasn't had that many opportunities to impress, obviously because of who he's been playing understudy to, but I mean, he's obviously very good with the ball at his feet, and I know for a fact that he took less than a week holiday this summer. He didn't go abroad, he spent the rest of the time.
He's probably not getting paid much with sustainable football clubs.
That's one thing. I know some people may look at that and think, how much truth is in it, but I know for a fact he's worked very, very hard on his fitness this summer, as he did last year, to ensure
he's probably
going into it
thinking, I am the number one. He's probably gutted now that we've got someone coming on loan from Liverpool.
And he didn't get a chance to come on. Lawrence Figueroa did so well, he probably deserved to stay on for the whole 90 minutes, but I think it probably is a shame for Ty.
Well, I would have thought 10 minutes would have been, you know, if you lose that game ultimately, it doesn't really matter, does it?
No.
I would have thought 10 minutes against his former club would have been quite nice, wouldn't you thought?
Unless Brendan Rodgers has specified that he wants to see his goalkeeper.
Well, possibly, yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah.
I'm speculating that.
Yeah. But you would think...
Things that when Sam speculates, there's probably some truth in it. So.
I don't know. But we've seen lots of other players come off and go on.
And
you just think 10 minutes would have been fine.
Cool. Okay. And in terms of transfer strategy, signings, trialists, standing, Sam, who is this chap behind the scenes, pulling the strings? Is he our new... Who's Paralo's mate?
Phil Spencer.
Is he our new Phil Spencer secret agent?
I think he knows an awful lot more about football than Phil Spencer. Phil Spencer was an estate agent who sold Paolo's house to him in London and then became his agent. Whereas Michael Standing has got... I know there's a light... I'm not confusing them with the Grand Designs. That is a true story. It's not the same Grand Designs guy that did it. Whereas Michael Standing is an ex-pro...
Location.
Yeah, he was on the books of Brighton and Aston Villa. He played alongside Gareth Barry in the academies there. Couldn't make it as a pro. He became Barry's agent. Now has an agency called First Touch Pro. She runs with his brother and another gentleman called Dan Drury. He is very close to the transfer business conducted by Swindon Town. He doesn't give the sign off on it, but he does a lot of the scouting work, or people who he knows do a lot of the scouting work for him. There are some associations with some transfers. He's certainly not the agent for all of the people who have come in. In fact, he's never been a licensed agent, but you don't need to have an agent's license anymore since FIFA changed the rules in April. But he was never a licensed agent. But he is involved in the scouting. He's a lot of games. You'll always see him amongst an entourage of between 6 and 10.
We saw him at Supermarine.
He was at Supermarine with 6 or so other agents or football people. And he is involved in helping the club pick up players. I generally refer to him as Lee Power's chief football advisor.
I thought you could say, refer to him as Sir.
So, look, he's been involved in bringing in some of these players who obviously have done very well for the club. So, like I was saying, I would never, ever question the way in which they've built the footballing side of this club. And he's an integral part of that.
Sure, okay. So moving on, Graham Button asks, how many more players do you think that we still need, and in what positions, And how many more do you think that Town will bring in, Vic?
Well, I mean, I think it's obviously we're a bit lightweight up front. It was a fantastic goal from Abika today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We were right behind him, and a tremendous finish. But is he going to get you 20, 25 goals a season? Big question. So if Michael Smith isn't going to fit in, you clearly need somebody up front. Defensively, I don't know, they look okay. Jordan Turnbull's addition looks all right. We've got thousands of midfield players, it seems to me. Do we need another central defender, though? That's my only question. But I think the main area of concern is up front, isn't it? I mean, we definitely need another striker.
Well, in terms of central defender, I'm working on the basis that Cooper's still playing the same formation as last year. He's not.
He'll be playing 4-3-3.
4-3-3. So another central defender probably isn't as crucial. But it all depends on Thompson's sort of injury. Is there much... Is it sort of carried on? Is he recovered?
Do you know, seems to be. You've seen the whole pre-season.
He's looked.
Have you not asked? Well, just to remind you, we're not really allowed to ask many questions.
he looked. To be fair, I think it was Solihull away, his first game back, I think, from the top of my head. But no, he's looked really, really sharp. And I think going back to right back, you asking about players who've stood out. He's been one of the players that stood out for me. He just looks more at home and more natural in that right back position. Against West Brom, they did go from a 4-3-3 to a 3-5-2 and back again, and he looked comfortable switching between right back and the position he performed in last year. The injury it looks like he's fully recovered from, and he'll be a key player both on and off the pitch again, because they have lost the spine of last year's team. I think me and Sam probably lost count of how many times we talked about the team's closeness on and off the pitch last year. That's now gone. Nathan Thompson said last week that it probably took him two seasons to build that up, so that's not going to come around as quickly this time. So he's going to be a massive power on and off the pitch, as will Kassim, who I think has stepped up to the plate this summer. Obviously there's been a lot of reported interest in him. It looks like he will start the season now. Whether he will still be there come the end of the transfer window, no one can say for sure, as we know things change in football. But if he does stay, he's going to be a key player as well. And it is important for those types of players to now step up to the plate and help them rebuild.
Yeah, because they're the senior pros, aren't they? And with a lot of young players about them. So, they've been there and done it in a Swindon T-shirt for the last couple of seasons. So they really are the people who you look to be the leaders on the pitch.
Okay. If anyone's wondering, actually, what the noise is, we're in the Roaring Donkeys, so not in my living room as usual. Right, media ban, stroke arrangement, stroke strategy. Let's get this one out of the way. Right. So, Vic. Right. So, Vic's interview with Malpass at Histon, going back to that, is a real reason why we need the press speaking directly to clubs or to, worried.
No, I'm not worried at all.
No, but in terms of quizzing, questioning, getting the answers, actually saying the hard questions.
Absolutely, that's what they're there for.
Exactly.
I'll go back to a point. If you have a great season, nobody wants the hard questions asked. You win 60% or 65% of your games, you're in the top six, you get to that W place that we shall not mention, everybody's kind of all right with that. If you're in the bottom six, life's a different ball game altogether. And then people want hard questions asked, and hard questions have to be asked. They're independent media people. That's what they do. They're not mouthpieces for the football club. And long may it remain so. Otherwise, what are we doing with the media? The local media, I think what football clubs kind of fail to realise is that people, they think, will just turn up week in, week out. And people will always know the game kicks off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday and they'll come along. Well, when results go against you, they don't always come along. And then you might just need your local media. And I don't know... I'm not involved in this, so I don't know what the reasons are for this, and it's up to the football club who they speak to and who they don't speak to. We should make that point straight away. That's their decision. Whilst it's working, they'll be happy with it. Whilst it's not working, maybe they won't be so happy.
I mean, you know, Swindon Leap Hour isn't the first by any means. It's gone back decades in terms of restrictions on journalists at football clubs, papers. To some degree, it has been limited. And where it's been used, it hasn't necessarily continued, and it's been generally derided in some circles. I mean, what is the real purpose? Or is it purely just, you know, the advertiser? What happened there in the past? It's just spilling over. It just thinks that the club can do it by themselves.
Where do you want me to start?
We don't know.
I'm looking at it. I've probably only got about 15 minutes left.
No. sorry, I should have started.
No, it's right that it comes last. The pressing thing is obviously the football side of it. That's what fans pay their money to watch. You know, that should be definitely come first on your podcast. However, this is an important issue, and not simply because we as journalists like to defend our industry and the work that we do and how we feel it should operate in tandem with professional sport. Why has it happened? I don't know for sure, because they've not answered the questions that I've asked them. I've now been waiting for 19 days for an email back asking for clarity on certain aspects of the statement, explaining what their reasoning was for the ban and the subsequent interview that the chairman did with The Guardian. I have yet to have an email acknowledging its receipt that the press officer has told me that it has been received and passed on. I can only speculate why it might have come into play. In that statement, they said that the logistical nature of the move to Beaversbrook was part of it. That was not mentioned once within the chairman's interview with The Guardian. He, however, did mention the possible future financial benefits to the football club. For me, getting an interview gives you more than a statement. This is the whole point of what I'm saying. Therefore, I'm more inclined to agree with what The Guardian has reported from their interview. Therefore, I don't believe that Beaversbrook has anything, but I think anyone sensible and thoughtful could analyse that wasn't the case. Future financial benefits. Good for the club. Brings in extra money. At what cost? Do you completely cut out all questions that have to be asked? And is this the first stage of more and more layered omissions of independent media? Because, let's face it, we don't miss that much by not having pretty much press conferences. There are some good questions that can be asked in there, and they are much better timed than a post-match where you can get nothing proper out of anyone because the manager and the players are just caught up in whatever result they just had, as we both know.
Looking a bit particular.
What are you looking at?
So we won't miss that much from not having these pretty much press conferences, but they're also not doing new signing press conferences. So they're not advertising.
Well, they're not even reporting them themselves.
Today they're not even reporting that they've signed Jordan Turnbull.
Until Cooper mentioned the post-match.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they promised that FansEye will offer a better way for fans to engage with their football club.
But that assumes that everybody, and this is, we have this in the radio industry, that assumes that everybody has access to the internet. I know you both run internet websites at the time, but not everybody does, you know. And not everybody's looking at their smartphone 24 hours a day. This is, I think, a bit of a...
Well, I can't even get fans on my smartphone because I haven't got an Apple or Android.
It's a bit of a misnomer. And you know what? Everybody's not looking at their smartphone 24 hours a day waiting for the latest utterance in Swindon Town Football Club. And I think that's the point, really, that they kind of got to take on board here.
Yeah, it may be foresight, of course, because you could be saying that they would be trendsetters in the future, which, if that is correct, and FansEye does become a major world player in professional football and has umpteen numbers of clubs involved with it, then they would have been the first, and they should be given the plaudits for it. But they launched it, trialled it, with an undercooked app that might become a decent app in the future. Fine. At the moment, it still doesn't function properly after two updates already on it. Why would you launch something on something that doesn't work? Is that not going to put people off doing it? Equally, why can it not operate its own exclusive, insightful, extra coverage of its football club for its fans, alongside a weekly pre-match press conference? Why is that the case? What? Obviously, we can't get an answer to that because they won't answer our questions. So you have to ask, is it financial? If it's financial in the future, fine, absolutely, just say that's what it is. Just be honest if there's a medium, long term or short term plan for recruiting players. Be honest if you want to omit the media because you want to direct your own traffic to your own website to create more revenue streams for yourself. Don't just haze over it with bluster. It's just, that's the whole point of what the media is there to do, is to show people that sometimes you have to challenge authority to get truth. Or you present a version of reality and ask fans to decide which version of reality they want to believe, but they need to have the option there.
Yeah.
It's not whether or not they choose to read Flick or Total or the Advert. You know, it's about people being made accountable. You have to let yourself become accountable. At the moment, I don't think that that is possible with the way that they're doing things. Sadly.
I think first and foremost, yeah. as has already been mentioned, it hasn't quite delivered what it promised. I mean, you know, like, they've still not officially confirmed Jordan Turnbull yet. There's other things when they have done the odd interview with a new signing, and they've not done it with every signing, but when they had, you know, Fabian.
We may or may not do
Fabian Robert, for example. I mean, I read that interview on the official club website first and foremost as a fan, because I am a Swindon Town fan first and foremost, and I came out of that article not having learned anything, or it was very, very bland. Other things they've done, which have been at a premium, have been very, very bland. Obviously, it's very club-heavy PR, which of course it's going to be, but it's not offering fans anything other than just a few lines. I mentioned this in my column piece, and it may be relevant, it may not be, but there was a point last season, November, the week leading up to the Bristol City game. Obviously, it's a big, big game for both sides. Bristol City were obviously unbeaten in the league. Swindon were going well for themselves, but in terms of Swindon's point of view, everything that could have gone wrong in the week leading up to it had. Obviously, the 5-0 defeat to Cheltenham. Nathan Thompson was still banned at that point until it was overturned. Yasser Kassim and Mas Malunga were away on international duty. We had a meeting with, went out for a lunch with Lee Power, where we had a very, I thought, productive chat with him about what the jobs we do, the relationship with the club. He wanted us to sort of assist the club in trying to drum up a feel good factor, I think, which we did. You know, we all know what happened on the Saturday. I'm not saying that we were to thank for that, but I think that was one example of what can happen when the local press and the club work together. And I mean, if you go back to Wembley, again, I could be wrong on this point, but I think if you put all the efforts put together by BBC Wiltshire, the Advert, Total Sport, and ourselves at Flick, Swindon were probably the most covered club out of the six at Wembley that weekend. And I mean, it just seems to me, again, as Sam said, we've not been given a real specific reason why this new arrangement is in place. But
one point is, and I think what people forget about is, you know, the challenging questions have to be asked, but deep down, Andrew and Sam would know, not only from Total Sports but also from the other point of view, when a football club is doing well, readership and papers, the sale of papers, goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, you know, they've got no real purpose in being negative about a football club unless they have to ask the questions that everybody wants to be answered. Radio stations' ratings will go up if Swindon Town are doing well. It's not rocket science.
It's the same for the Washboat. In terms of, you know, views on our site, it goes exactly the same as probably you two as well. Just general interest. Power to Canny, it was absolutely mad, the amount of interest.
Now, if you're scraping along the bottom, nobody's interested.
Okay, but in terms of what you say about sort of potential financial reasons why, I think going back to the survey that I did back in January in terms of media habits for Town supporters, that actually did show that a very small percentage, really less than 10%, actually go first to the official club website for club information. So to some extent, that kind of, if indeed that they are trying to direct more people to their site in terms of financial, kind of just back that up as an approach.
Yeah, because
even myself, I go to Your Good Selves, Swindon Advertiser, etc. For news. I don't go to the club website.
And they will have had a big rise in the weeks after their decision to change things up. And again, it's their choice to do that.
Mm.
And I'm really not just moaning because I can't get an interview with John Obika before a game away at Doncaster. That's not the reason that I'm trying to bring these issues up. It's much more, I say ethical, it's probably the wrong word. Moral is probably too extreme, but it's properly holding people in authority to account. fans believe that they can do that independently, absolutely do it. That's fine. And if they feel that they don't need the media, who are basically paid professionals to do that job for them, so they don't have to, then fine.
Exactly. Because I mean, that's the end. I mean, do their immediate restrictions, the arrangements will change you. It needs to go hand in hand with the club putting more resources in house to help.
I mean,
the press officer,
Tom Trebsky.
You know, he produces the best program in the division. And he's got to do every single thing else.
You know, the one person that you have to have a great deal of sympathy for, although he won't say this obviously, is Tom, because he works his small socks off. You know, I mean, he does, doesn't he? And you know, and you know, nobody should ever run away with the idea that he's somehow involved in trying to prevent everybody else getting news, because Tom is a very affable person.
Exactly. You know, and I've got various different social media accounts for the Washburn. It's so difficult to actually provide content and to go, oh God, I've got to update that one now. For one person to go on all these different spheres, update the club website programme, it's a nightmare. And the club need, I presume.
Well, he does have Callum Hampson with him, who does the social media side of things with him. But even that, if he's expected to create the amount of content that will give them the kind of coverage that they have promised in that statement, and people should hold them to that promise, and that's not Tom's fault again, that's the people above him have promised a certain level of coverage, which hasn't yet been fulfilled, but might be in the future. If they can't do that, then it just shows that in their current state, it is impossible for them to run their own media department externally. Bring someone in, do it better. Bring someone in to help with Tom. Fine. But at the moment, they're not equipped to take on the role that they are saying they're going to do. Nor will they ask the questions they need to ask. It's daft to suggest they would.
Okay. One final sort of question is, John Mortimer asks, is the lack of a buzz this season due to press coverage, and will this affect attendances?
Well, I think to go back to the W word, I think that kind of had a bit of a... I mean, those of us who were there that day, I know Ronnie had very good reason for not being there. That's fair enough.
It was a great day.
Yeah, I know. And you had the better end of the deal, although I'm sure your wife at the time didn't agree with that. I think there was a lot of a hangover about that, because everybody trooped off to Wembley with a great deal of, well, I wouldn't say confidence, because it is Wembley, for the new Wembley. And it was such a horrible day. No Swindon fan would have enjoyed any minute of that game. Well, maybe the first minute, but after that, that was it. So I think that may have had an effect on people's interest in the football club this season.
Cool. Right. Might as well get on to predictions soon, that we are pre-season and we are all hope and expectations for the season ahead. You know, Town are going to win the league, you know, get to the semi-final, etc. It's going to be a great season. So Town's start is relatively easy in my eyes. Famous last words: Bradford, Bury, Porchvale and Southend. Exeter in the cup in between. Is that easy, or am I just being a bit, you know?
I don't think it's easy. I think I did an article on the opening month and the fixtures were first announced. I think on paper it looks, I think it will be tougher. I think Bradford for me will be top six. Bury have spent wow, I'd say, for a club of their size, and they've spent a lot. So
I don't use the word well. Very interesting.
But, no, sorry, I'm really rubbish at people. Well, listeners will know about keeping up to date. What have Bury done then? Seriously, I don't
know.
Anything
well,
about Bury.
I say well in these terms. Obviously, they've.
Please explain.
Tom Pope,
Leon Clark,
and Leon Clark. I think Tom Pope
used to play for Port Vale, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's a great signing.
Tom Pope for a club like Bury is a decent enough signing. He'll get your goals. Leon Clark, I think Swindon fans obviously have their view of Leon. I think if he cut out the obvious, he is capable of getting goals, but there is the small problem of his temperament. But I think
small problem.
Bury, their first game back in League One, but when Swindon go there, I don't think it'll be that easy. So I don't think it's that much of an easy month.
No, you agree, Sam? You just kind of wait, you just take it as it comes and see how it pans out.
James Hansen is going to be a huge wake-up call for Brandon Ormond, Ottawa and Jordan Williams and Kevin Stewart on the first day of the season.
Okay,
there we go.
Having seen Exeter City play Bournemouth in a recent friendly,
Dave,
to me, made one of the signings of the summer in Christian Ribeiro, who I think Swindon were interested in.
Yeah.
terrific to get him back on board. So that's not going to be an easy game at all.
Cool. Okay. Well, really looking forward to the replay against Sheffield United on Bank. Is it Bank Holiday weekend?
Yes,
score is going to be Sam. What is it?
You're asking me the score of a game that is happening in 5 games and 27 days time.
I tell you what, I'll save it for a later podcast. I don't know.
Do you want me to give you a score now?
Well, because the last one's been high scoring.
Do I get a prize?
Yes, I'll buy you a pint.
1-1.
Okay, 1-1 for Sam. But anyway, right. We'll forget that. Right, Andrew, so we're town the only sort of south-west stroke southern team pretty much in Division 3 North this year.
Yeah.
Who are our rivals that you're really looking forward to playing, if anyone?
Walsall.
Obviously, be good to go to, well, I say good to go. Having Millwall back in the league, obviously.
Really?
Someone we haven't played. Oh, as in terms of.
Get out!
No, in terms of. I would take.
Andrew is young and has yet to go and cover a game in Millwall.
He was only nine. Yeah. Well,
I mean, 2010. Maybe not going to Millwall itself, but I mean, in terms of having a different team. You know, you look at the league this year, there's so many northern based teams in there.
Come on, quick answer. Vic.
Well, I'm really looking forward to playing up Exeter, but I wish it had been the other way around and they'd been at Exeter. That'd been great, to be honest. But I can't even think of a local derby. What is a local derby this
year? Walsall.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going to Blackpool. I've not been to Blackpool to cover a game, so that'll be new. I'm looking forward to going to the JJB to cover a game, or whatever it's called now, the DW. Get it right.
Good prize.
Sponsors.
Good prize.
Yeah. Anywhere that's a new ground for me is generally something to look forward to.
Have you got any new grounds? I was trying to think.
New ones?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
No, off the top of my head.
I believe so, after Fleetwood went this year.
Yeah.
Right, where would Town finish this season, Andrew? Go on.
I'll go for 12.
12 for you, right, okay.
Yeah.
Sam?
Where will they finish?
Yeah.
If you'd asked me that question 3 weeks ago, I would have said 17th.
So you're more positive or negative?
So I'm more positive now. I think that they have the capacity to do better.
What, 16th?
Yeah, by one goal and goal difference. I think that they have the ability to sort of contend, but I'm still convinced that last year was a well-orchestrated fluke, so I'll say 11th.
I would go with my usual thing, top half. I'd be delighted with.
Yeah, I was going to say 10th, so we're pretty much the same. So
top half and anything better than that is fantastic.
Yeah, good. Right, we'll the big questions till the end. Will Cooper still be the manager come May?
Come when?
What, at the end of the season?
Oh.
I plead the fifth, Ron.
Yeah, you don't think he will?
Plead the fifth, Ron.
I think it's an impossible question to answer.
Yeah, okay. We'll ditch that one until later then. Probably not. Right, so who's going to win the division?
Sheffield United.
Yeah.
For me, they've got the best man for the job to get a team out of that division. Obviously, Billy Sharp will get goals. I'm convinced they'll still be busy until the transfer window shuts. So yeah, Sheffield United.
Yeah, well, I've gone for Sheffield United and Wigan to be the top two.
If you've got a front two of Connor Sam and Billy Sharp in League One, you'd expect to score goals, especially when you're paying the sort of money per week that they are, which is a lot, by the way. So yes, them, Wigan, Millwall.
Yeah, I think those are the sort of
teams. Playoff winners, I've gone for Barnsley.
Scunthorpe.
Really?
Well, it's just a wild card. Thought it was something different.
It's pretty good.
I'd go for Walsall because I think, you know, decent manager, aren't they? Dean Smith, and they play decent football. And
blimey.
Very in-out club, aren't they? They've won very surprising season.
But you know what? Sometimes it's quite nice to see somebody different win something, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's very true.
Right, relegation. I've gone for Crewe, Colchester, Blackpool and Southend.
You've got to go to Blackpool at the moment, haven't you?
Yeah.
Blackpool.
Crewe always seem to be around there and then
don't
not
want Crewe
relegated.
To go because they've got the best chip shop in the league.
Yeah, always.
You want to visit there?
Yeah, we don't want them to go. Thanks.
Cool.
Port Vale. Yeah. I always say they're going to finish bottom four. They never do.
They don't.
So yeah, Port Vale.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, that's all of our predictions sorted out. So. Thanks all for coming on the podcast this time. Maybe do one after the what's the next game?
the next
Bradford. Bradford. I've forgotten already, which we talked about a couple of minutes ago. So, yeah, do enough of that, hopefully. And podcasts will be more regular this season. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not, but you be the judge. So, thank you all, and speak to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.